Poppycock. Poppycock. You're listening to the Dare Daniel podcast, where you send us your most sinister movie dares, and we, that being Corky and Daniel, we suffer the consequences for your amusement. I'm Corky McDonald, and I'm not a stalker. I'm not a stalker. And with me, as always, is film critic Daniel Barnes.
Hi, everyone. As Corky said on this show, we do your dirty work by watching the most unwatchable movies you can imagine, and then we review and rate them on our unique system. A run-of-the-mill bad film is rated a dare. We give a double dare to those truly atrocious movies, and we reserve the reverse dare for a despised movie that we think is actually pretty good.
Today on the podcast, we're kicking off Travoltember by reviewing John Travolta in a recently released film called The Fanatic, a quote-unquote psychological thriller directed by Fred Durst.
I really felt quotes were needed for psychological thriller.
I want to put quotes around Fred Durst. But before we get started, Daniel's going to tell us about the beer we're drinking during the show.
Well, since, you know, I don't want to get too heavy into spoilers, but I would say the movie is about a crush.
Ooh.
A man crush.
Sure.
Sort of a non-sexual man crush. Slightly sexual man crush?
Slightly sexual.
We can get into it. So I thought, let's go with a crush beer, a crushable beer. So we went with Moonraker Galaxy Crush. This is from their Crushable series. It's a pale ale, 6% alcohol by volume, single hop. They've done a bunch of these, Mosaic and Simcoe. And this is Galaxy Hops. Galaxy Hop is a pretty recent, maybe just last 10 years in the beer world. Mm-hmm. It's an Australian hop, gives a lot of really good fruity flavors. So you definitely get that coming through in the beer. Corky, your thoughts on
fruity,
Galaxy Crush?
Sweet, pale ale with no hint of bitter at all. It's not got a nice finish too.
Yeah.
What does crush mean? Is that a specific thing?
In the beer world, it essentially means like a crushable beer. Like
you could slam it.
You could have a bunch of them. And so this one's 6%, so it's not as heavy as some of the other IPAs and double IPAs out there. So this is Moonraker from Auburn. Probably the best brewery, I think, in the Sacramento area.
Nice. Big
and
endorsement,
this
Daniel.
This is a damn good beer, Galaxy Crush. So go check it out. So before we get into our listener dares, I thought we've just come out of Scare Daniel Month. Mm-hmm. Right, I mean, can you believe it's Travoltember already?
Hey, Corktober's over.
I'm still writing Corktober on all my checks. Come on!
I haven't
Where's even, my rim shot?
Add my Corktober decorations are still sitting out. There's beards everywhere.
So I thought, let's just talk about Scare Daniel really quickly. We had four movies in the Scare Daniel series this year. One that I want to immediately jump on is Brain Scan. And this is just because as we're recording this now, I just put together the episode. So I just re-listened to it and was doing research to put together the post for the show.
Yeah.
Now, if you go to daredaniel.com and you go to some of these posts, you see that I will kind of augment the post with some related videos.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
The trailer for the film, scenes from the film, or scenes from another movie that we talk about, a scene that we talk about. As I was doing the research for Brain Scan, I found a segment from Entertainment Tonight in 1994 that is promoting this movie. John Tesh introduces it, Brain Scan, coming out this Friday. So go check out the post on that. And let me tell you, if you thought T. Rider Smith was carrying Eddie Furlong in the film Brain Scan, holy crap, does he really carries him during this brutally bad segment on Entertainment Tonight from a quarter century ago.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this.
As the director of Brain Scan said, you had to, quote, slap Eddie Furlong awake in the morning. And oh, someone forgot to slap him awake before this E.T. segment. Because he looks like his eyes are closed practically throughout the entire thing. So yeah, check that out, Brain Scan. But that was kind of a movie that I think was interesting.
Yeah.
But bad still.
Yeah,
however, there were two just absolutely brutal lows. I think Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, sublimely bad.
Yes.
Undeniably bad, but sublimely fascinatingly bad. Vampire yes. Academy and American Werewolf in Paris.
Just.
The pits.
Yeah.
The pits.
The dregs.
Worst of imaginable. And let me tell you, the real find is an American Werewolf in Paris. I'm talking about find if you're a connoisseur of like the worst movies possible. I could not believe how bad that was. I'm still kind of reeling over how bad that film is. Yeah, Scare Daniel was another fun Scare
one.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Of course, we'll do it again next year. But yeah, for now, thanks everybody for the dares. It was a really fun one.
Thank you much. So getting into the dares that we're going to be reading this episode from our wonderful listeners. The first one where we're going to knock out of here is Julio from the Contrarians podcast sent us the dare of Christmas with the Cranks.
Christmas with the Cranks.
The Contrarians.
Have you ever seen this film?
I have not. I have not. But I the Contrarians podcast is another movies podcast. Yep. So they know it's getting to be that time of the season.
Right. Yeah, they know that we got Christmas movies.
We're moving from Corktober to Triple Timber.
Yes. And then we'll come up with another fun name for December. Some kind of
Christmas with the Cranks is a 2004 movie directed by Joe Roth, who is a former chairman of Walt Disney Studios. He left that job to make terrible movies based on John Grisham novels, I guess.
It's based on a John Grisham novel. Christmas with the Cranks.
Is there a lawyer that is corrupt somewhere?
There's a murder in a southern town. Tim Allen has to come in and save the day.
There's a corrupt politician somewhere. The screenplay was by Christopher Columbus, and it stars Tim Allen. Man, it gets shittier and shittier, doesn't it?
The more you peel out this onion, the worse it gets.
This is a trend of especially sour Christmas movies, so the same year as Surviving Christmas and a couple years before Deck the Halls. All those, like, bah humbug Christmas movies.
Yeah, post 9/11, man. Rough times.
So why did Julio Darris this movie? He says, for the longest time, whenever we watched a bad movie for our show, I'd bring us home by asking my co-host, was it worse than Christmas with the Cranks? It's kind of like how we do with Ultraviolet.
Sure.
Or Christmas Story 2.
Right.
The answer was always no. It all ended when we watched Geely, but you guys have already done that one, I think, or maybe I'm thinking of Gotti.
We have not done Geely.
No.
I've seen Geely like twice, though.
I've heard Geely's just one of the legendary bad movies.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
The IMDb,
we have done Gotti, though.
We did Gotti. We crushed it.
Fucking killed Gotti.
Fucking nailed it. Whacked it.
Didn't kill Gotti.
The IMDb synopsis for Christmas with the Cranks is, with their daughter away, the Cranks decide to skip Christmas altogether until she decides to come home, causing an uproar when they have to celebrate the holiday at the last minute. So this is a movie about someone just troubled that someone's visiting.
They don't want to have Christmas, but now they have to have Christmas.
What a movie.
God, white people problems, man. Thank you very much, Julio. Thank you, Julio. The Contrarians for sending us that dare. Our next dare comes straight from the wormhole. Man, I stuck my arm in that wormhole. It got real confusing in there, bro. So I plucked a single dare out of the wormhole, and it comes to us from Adam Sandler, the Adam Sandler. He wants us to watch The Ridiculous Six. He wants us to watch his own film.
The Adam Sandler?
It says Adam Sandler.
Star of Little Nicky Adam Sandler?
Star of Little Nicky.
The creative force behind
Mr. Deeds.
Mr. Deeds.
Murder Mystery. So, The Ridiculous Six, this is the 2015 straight-to-Netflix comedy western. It stars Adam Sandler, Owen Wilson, Terry Crews, directed by frequent Adam Sandler collaborator Frank Caracci, who also directed Wedding Singer, Waterboy, Click, and Blended. It has a zero on Rotten Tomatoes.
How crazy is it that when you say Wedding Singer, Waterboy, Click, and Blended, that's like you're saying the good ones. The slightly above average Adam Sandler movies.
That's our goal.
Zero on RT.
Zero on Rotten Tomatoes for 36 reviews. Why did Adam Sandler want us to watch his own film? He says, so you mentioned Ridiculous Six in your Cool as Ice episode. He's a fan of the show.
Attaboy.
Which means you should have to subject yourself to this 0% beauty on Rotten Tomatoes. Cool as Ice has a 7% tomato meter score. Astronomically higher than the 0% of The Ridiculous Six. IMDb synopsis of The Ridiculous Six. An outlaw who was raised by Native Americans discovers that he has 5 half-brothers. Together, the men, I bet they're comically mismatched.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
That one's fat.
Together, the men go on a mission to find their wayward deadbeat dad. Have you seen this movie?
I have not.
Have you seen any of the Adam Sandler?
I don't even remember bringing it up during the Cool as Ice episode.
So this is part of a deal that this was the first movie of his Netflix deal.
Oh, that's
right.
Which
was like a 4 movie deal.
Yeah.
And then he signed another 4 movie deal. So he's on, I think, movie 5.
He's a hell of a businessman.
Whoa, right?
But,
I mean, it's a good deal, but wow. These movies, like, you thought his theatrical releases were lazy? Like, these take it to the next level. Like, the newest one with Jennifer Aniston is called Murder Mystery. It's like, it's too lazy to name the movie.
I would
just say, hey, Adam, can you name the movie? No.
It's called Working Title.
So thank you very much, Adam Sandler, for daring us to watch your own terrible movie. We will take it under advisement.
And now, our feature presentation.
The Fanatic. This was a movie that Bad Movie Podcast.
Same as Gotti.
Yeah, same as Gotti. Everybody's talking about how bad
everyone's doing it already. We got Dare. We got two Dares like in the same day about this movie.
And both of them said, I haven't seen it, but I know it's awful.
Yeah, like it's already has a legendary status as soon as it came
out. And people who aren't even daring are asking like, hey, are you guys doing that movie?
Exactly. Yeah.
This Dare came to us from frequent darer and listener Jana Sinclair. I don't even know if this movie is out yet, but it looks absolutely atrocious. Maybe it's a bit cruel asking you guys to pay to watch it, but you can't make an omelet without a pan, a spatula, a heat source, and breaking a few eggs. We also got a dare from our good friend Gav from Films on Trial.
Gav was there to second the dare. I mean, so, that was the official, I think, when it went to the committee at that point.
That's right. Yeah, it was motioned and seconded. Had to do it.
Parliamentary procedure above all else, sir.
IMDb synopsis for The Fanatic. A rabid film fan stalks his favorite action hero and destroys the star's life.
So, The Fanatic, starring John Travolta and co-written and directed by none other than Fred Durst, the lead singer of the rock and roll band Limp Bizkit. Not the first time Durst has been behind the camera of a feature film, though. You might think this is a debut film because it is so poorly made. No, he also made the 2007 indie drama The Education of Charlie Banks and the 2008 family sports comedy The Long Shots with Ice Cube and Kiki Palmer. This one stars John Travolta as Moose. Does he ever get a last name?
Nope.
No last name. Moose. Obsessed fan of action star Hunter Dunbar. Oh boy, does he get a last name. Who is played by Devon Sawa. The film got, let's say, a limited theatrical release on August 30, 2019, then went straight to VOD. Like, straight vroom, to VOD. On its opening day, The Fanatic grossed a little over $3,000 on 52 screens. That's not actually that bad. $3,000 on 52 screens. That's $60 per screen. Let's break it down. Average ticket price is a little over $9. You have several shows a day. It was getting seven tickets for theater. This thing was playing to empty houses on opening day, despite the fact that John Travolta, as you say, was on Good Morning Freaking America.
He was doing the rounds on this one, man.
No one wanted this movie. Film is supposedly inspired by a real-life fanatic. I mean, this film smacks of real life. My God. Who stalked Durst back in his Limp Bizkit days. And, of course, Devon Sawa, little tie-in with stalkers everywhere, he played the ultimate obsessed fan, Stan, who now is like the... That's the word that means obsessed fan, right?
Yeah.
That you're the Stan... You Stan... Oh, fucking kids. I hate you all. In the video for the Eminem song... Stan. The movie was filmed in and around Birmingham, Alabama, because that's where you would film a movie set in Hollywood. And it is most notable for the fucking insane hair that Travolta spouts out of this movie. Rejected, obviously, by audiences. Rejected by critics. 18 on Rotten Tomatoes. 17 on Metacritic. Quirky.
Yeah.
I want you to look deep into those milk cow eyes of Moose.
Milk cow.
You're not going to reject him too, are you? Don't reject Moose.
It's hard to be nice to Moose, though, because the man whines even when somebody's being nice to him. God. I've never seen a more petulant performance by someone who's 70 years old.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's not American Werewolf in Paris bad. It's not a complete unmitigated disaster. It's definitely bad. We should mention it's brought to us by Redbox Entertainment.
Yeah, that's weird.
Redbox. Mrs. Reed is digging this movie.
Was not available in Redbox when it released.
Remember that Gotti was produced by MoviePass.
Yep.
So Travolta's just getting it done.
Getting it right.
Get those movies made however you're going to do it. Yeah, I love that. Like, those are both services that sell movies and rent movies, and like nobody wanted this.
Yeah.
Like, they found the ultimate movie that
the only reason this movie was in 52 theaters is because Travolta's from a time when that meant something.
Right. We have to get this in theaters.
We can't just release straight to home release. And that's the only reason it was in 52 theaters for like 1 week.
Absolutely. So, Corky, I want to start on a semi-positive note.
Okay.
Because we're going to shit all over this thing for the next hour or so.
Right? Yeah.
Travolta, holy my God, holy fucking shit. He does a lot of acting, pretty much all bad. But if you judge acting by sheer volume, like you just put it on a scale and you just weight it all, he would win 11 Oscars for this movie. I don't know how that's possible. Possibly like a clerical error, just an extra one. But he would win 11 Oscars. It boggles the mind. I will say that in a strange, weird, backwards sort of a way, he has a sort of integrity.
Yeah.
He has a commitment.
I'm with you.
To horrible acting choices. A lot of ham actors would come into a project like this and say, I'm going to get 1, 2, maybe 3 character ticks. I'm just going to ride those two or three things into the ground.
Do them occasionally. Space them out.
No. I want dozens of character ticks. I want to do one in every single scene. I also want to just repeat those character
ticks. I will
ticks.
Layer them. I will then affect those ticks onto other people.
You get the feeling he has come in, he gets to the set, and he has made his decisions.
You just know he stayed in character during breaks. You just know he made people call him Moose, not John, not Mr. Travolta. He was Moose on set.
Absolutely.
The one thing you can say about Travolta is that he does not sleepwalk.
No.
He will not check out.
He goes for it.
Yes.
He absolutely goes
and
for it.
And how you said that the Rourke and Fountainhead commitment, he's going to bring it down. If it's for me, he was the only thing, or he's the only reason to watch this
for
movie.
For sure. For sure. But it is pretty astoundingly bad.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible.
This movie is just incredibly poorly made and very cold and cruel and stupid. How stupid? It opens with a quote from one of its own characters.
And when you finally get to the end of the movie, you realize that quote was said under duress. Yes. And he's saying it to try to con the guy to let him free. And they use that quote at the opening of the movie.
As though it's like, this is setting the tone. It's so bizarre. So the quote is, "You are a fan. Without you, I'm nothing." And the quote is by the actor, Hunter Dunbar.
Not only do you get a quote.
Narration.
You get voiceover.
How about some pointless narration? We don't meet her yet, but the woman narrating is Leia. Leia the Lady Paparazzo. So I guess paparazza? Is that the feminine paparazzo?
Paparazzette.
She's the narrator. She comes in and says, Los Angeles. I call it the city of bullshitters. And that is the kind of dialogue you'll be getting for the next 88 minutes of your fucking worthless life.
She says, I call it the city of bullshitters and I should know I'm one of its residents or something like that. It's like always good to set up with an unreliable narrator. I'm full of bullshit.
So we see Travolta as Moose on his scooter. Corky, describe Moose.
He's got a really bad haircut. It's like a mullet meets a bowl
Caesar.
Cut. Yeah, but like
with
doesn't connect.
Sides. Yes. Yeah. Oh man, it is bizarre.
And this is a movie, like you said, the representation. He's obviously got some mental deficiencies. Yeah. He's on some spectrum of some sort, and that is personified by him wearing floral prints and plaids.
Plaid shorts.
That's cargo shorts and sneakers represent mental deficiencies
in this
movie.
He has
this
hideous haircut. He has this gray beard. He's wearing glasses. He's very schlumpy.
Yeah.
He has this walk that is sort of like, if you've ever seen those inflatable mascots, like at an NBA game, they're these big inflatable
they
things.
They bounce in the wrong places.
They bounce forward. They bounce, but their arms don't move. So they're just these big things that are just like sort of dawdling forward. That's what he kind of reminded me of.
That is perfect.
But yeah, he has he's on his motor scooter. He has like a bicycle helmet on his motor scooter.
He's rolling through Hollywood.
And he comes to his favorite movie memorabilia store. And boy, does he just have a litany of, like I said, tics. Everything is it's so over the top. It's fascinating.
The first line from this character, the first thing, how we meet this character, the first opening dialogue in this movie is, please.
Because I feel connected to Moose.
Sure.
Super connected. So yes, he walks
in. You're wearing floral prints and plaids.
Yes. First line by our protagonist, Moose. He walks into the store. He sees the clerk of the store and he says, I can't talk too long. I got to poo. End quote. So Moose is a super fan of Hunter Dunbar. He is a movie freak. He is just this absolutely obsessive. He's just one of those kind of obsessive hanger-on types, right? Like a show business sort of hanger-on. He has this autograph collection. He collects memorabilia. This guy at the store is obviously just like hitting this dude up for money because this guy is absolutely obsessed with Hunter Dunbar. He buys a jacket that was worn in one of his movies that is like this leather vest with no sleeves that on the back says Rico in like studs. Which, like, was this guy in Cruising? No, this is supposed to be like an action movie or something. That this
all Hunter Dunbar's movies are called like Space Cops, Ghost Vampires, Time Police.
Yeah, and Moose has like a crush. It's a crush. I don't know that he necessarily wants to have sex with him or anything. He definitely wants to like kiss him on the forehead and just, he has this sort of ownership, right? You know, which is what the whole movie is about. He also talks about how there's going to be an event in the store the next night.
No, he's going to a party with Hunter Dunbar that night.
He's going to party with Hunter Dunbar that night, but then the guy's also like, well, Hunter Dunbar's coming to the store tomorrow night, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh my God. So he's like super excited because he has Hunter Dunbar's jacket now. He actually puts his jacket on backwards, and the guy's like, hey, you put it on backwards. And he goes, I know. And then just slumps out of the store. He gets on his bike, but he is like super stoked on his bike. He's very, very proud of himself with his backwards leather vest.
So the credit sequence is a collection of Hollywood landmarks, Devon Sawa's home movies.
Yeah.
And homeless people.
Pictures of homeless people.
On Skid Row.
Yeah.
It's so disjointed and all over the place.
I don't even, it's just like, what the hell is this movie going for? And you're like, wow, is this going to be this whole thing that goes out the movie with homeless people? And it's like, nope.
Nope. Just remind you that there's homeless people in LA.
It just isn't. That is gone and it's not coming back. So yeah, we meet Leah again. That's our narrator. She says, I just wanted to be a good friend. Her character is so poorly defined. I felt as though maybe the movie originally had her as just another shithead and that she got retconned at some point.
It would
to be
way
like,
more interesting
hey,
if she was.
Be the sort of quasi good guy because she is absolutely exploiting this guy.
Yeah.
Every step of the way. We see her on the street. She's super excited because she got like a nip slip photo or something like that. Like she's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But then it's always coming in and like, oh, she'll take care of him sort of.
She's not too defined either way.
Yeah, exactly. But she does constantly like harangue him.
So she found out where Hunter Dunbar was going to be at this crew rap party and is breaking him into this party.
Yeah. And he has to climb over a fence at which point Travolta, there is a stunt double
with
a hilariously small ass.
That is not like, Travolta
is so,
going over that
his
fence.
His ass is so comically taut. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, you don't even want to get someone even remotely the same body shape. His name's Moose. Don't be too vain about
that's
it.
That's right, huh?
Moose crashes the party. Hunter's actually not there, though. But
right.
Moose has to ask this other actress for an autograph, but it gets really awkward because Moose is crazy awkward and gets like a little too aggressive.
He has no social awareness except for the times when he does.
He will realize something, but then he will forget it. Like,
oh
instantly.
My God.
He'll have a revelation.
And that's the thing. His portrayal is not really true to any kind of, you know, autistic or Asperger spectrum. It's really just, I'm a child. Yeah. I'm Simple Jack.
What does Moose do? Like, what does he do for cash?
Gorky. He's got a sweet apartment, though. Like, they go back to his
really
apartment.
Nice
I'm like,
apartment.
How the fuck does this guy afford
we
this
don't
place?
Even know. Yeah, because he seems to, like, barely be able to, like, hold it together.
Yeah. This man should not be allowed in public without people helping him.
No, exactly. But at the
I'm
same
not
time,
saying should be allowed, but you know what I mean.
He seems to be doing just fine. We see no family members. We see no caretakers or anything like that. He's completely self-sufficient.
Well,
somehow.
You know how? Because he makes that sweet, sweet British Bobby money, baby. So we get to see a scene.
Oh my God.
It's set to like the, remember those old Levi's commercials where the kids in Times Square would drum on the buckets?
Yes.
It's set to that kind of sound. And he is in a mirror in a restroom getting ready, dressed like a British Bobby. Travolta does the worst British accent on purpose.
Oh yeah,
on purpose.
Not
and
that he can do a good
going,
one.
Poppycock. Welcome to Hollywood. The B.O.'s are coming. I could have watched 9 hours That's of Travolta as the Bobby.
That's your movie
if
right
you
there.
If you made a movie just about that character busking on Hollywood Boulevard.
Give what people what they demand. But yeah, he is one of those people on Hollywood Boulevard who dresses in a costume and harasses tourists for tips, for photos and
because
things like that.
Tourists do not want to see Captain Jack Sparrow. They don't want to see Spider-Man. They want a British Bobby.
He has the worst costume. It's absolutely fucking hilarious. Yeah, but it's amazing. So he's out there, and guess what? He's bad at it. Yep. He doesn't get a lot of tips. We see him just like desperately trying to draw a crowd and absolutely failing. But who isn't failing? Todd.
Todd the God.
Todd the God. Hardcore illusionist.
Chris Angel on steroids.
He's a hardcore illusionist. He draws a crowd, including Cereal Man. Cereal Man is just watching it. He has a cereal box for a face. He's like, I'm going to check out what Todd the God's doing. This guy's doing real magic.
I'm a fan of extra work, and the reaction shots from all the extras to Todd the God's pseudo illusion.
Yes.
They are fucking orgiastic at this. Right. They're like, oh, this man's a real messiah.
So his whole thing is he takes a nail and puts it in his nose, but uses some fake blood. But his real game is that he has a Confederate at the same time while he is fascinating crowds with this garbage magic that he is picking all of their pockets.
Yep.
Right. And this is his scheme. And he wants Moose to join the scheme because his Confederate runs off.
Yeah, that's
later. But then
it's
just back later.
Yeah, that part is indecipherable. What happens with that relationship?
Yeah. So they're divvying up the money. Moose knows all about this whole score, but
somehow
he's not going to say anything. And these guys are kind of bullies, right? And then we see that Todd the God is like cheats his friend, and his friend takes off, and then Todd jumps on Moose and is like, buddy, you know, you got to get in on this thing. But Moose doesn't want any part of it.
Right. So just remember, Todd the God and his buddy broke up right there.
I know, right? So now we're at the event back at the memorabilia store where Hunter Dunbar is going to appear. So remember, he didn't get his Hunter Dunbar moment.
Right. Right?
So now he's really fiending for some Hunter Dunbar moments. So he's in line, and he has this sort of like fantasy sequence where it gets kind of soft lighting and everything like that. Moose gets to the front of the line, but Hunter Dunbar gets whisked away. He has to go away. So you got someone here to see you.
So this is the thing. Nobody along the lines, Travolta's performance is like probably the most believable because nobody behaves right in any normal way.
No.
Everybody does the worst thing to Moose at the worst time.
Absolutely.
He gets to the front of the line. All he wants is his Hunter Dunbar moment to sign this jacket that he just bought the day before. The guy who's paid Hunter Dunbar to show up at his store whisks him out of there while he's got a line out the fucking door.
The guy who just sold him the jacket too.
Yeah.
Basically like promised him this thing. It was like, this could take 5 seconds.
He's more marriage counselor for Hunter Dunbar.
He's like, I'm worried about Hunter Dunbar's marriage.
Go talk to your wife, pal.
Yeah. Ex-wife,
I think. Ex-wife, yeah, she's in
but
the back.
There's a kid in the car, which means it's a good time to start yelling at Hunter Dunbar. And here's Hunter Dunbar's whole thing. He's a complete dick.
Asshole.
To everyone.
You said there's no hero. There's nobody to root for. It's true. You never give anybody one good moment.
You don't have any feeling for him, right? He's not. You don't even get like, oh man, but he's like a lonely guy and he's a jerk and he's asked of a lot. I mean, he just is a dick for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
No reason at all. So yeah, he goes out, basically tells his wife, screw, get out of here, taking off. Moose follows Hunter out because, again, Moose has just no awareness of any situation, right? And he's like, oh, you got to sign my jacket. I got your vest. And Hunter's just big, tells him to get the hell out of here, at which point Moose yells, I'm on your side. That's great. But Hunter acts like a dick, tells him to get the fuck out of there.
He says, how about I sign your face with my fucking fist? And that's an autograph you don't want. Writing, ladies and gentlemen. Fucking writing.
That is just good writing. So he meets Leia. Leia tells him about this app, this Star Maps
Leia
app.
Leia is dangerously naive.
What? Or she's calculating? I have no idea.
You think she planned it?
Who knows?
Yeah.
That's how poorly defined her character is. She's constantly exploiting him and constantly getting him to do stuff. And then she's constantly like, you did what?
Yeah. And she shows him an app that shows where the stars' homes are.
And the stars are all made up people.
Jack Torrance.
Tyler Durden, yep. And Jack Torrance. But he's like, oh, wow, I can go find anyone. Probably won't use this to find Hunter Dunbar. She's like, use it wisely. Okay. So he writes a weird fanboy letter to Hunter Dunbar.
We have a voiceover while John Travolta is manically writing this letter. And that scene was necessary to let you know Travolta's a weird guy. Because we hadn't established that yet.
We were still on the fence there.
Every scene in this movie plays seven times over. You get the same scene seven times over.
You had to fill it out to get to 88 minutes.
To get to that long 88.
So he goes to Hunter's house because he has the Star Maps app. Goes to his house. He's outside when Hunter Dunbar comes home with his son and tells his son to get inside, but basically threatens Moose.
Just fucking ratchets it up.
And humiliates him. Like, yeah. Moose is ready to go, and he's like, I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. And humiliates him, treats him like shit, takes him off. So Moose takes off, tail between his legs.
So where Moose finds his house, right? It's in the, I guess, Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
It's in the ritzy area.
Birmingham, Alabama.
Was Hunter Dunbar a current famous movie star, or was he like past his prime guy?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because he lives in a fucking sweet house.
Yeah.
Later on, he's negotiating a deal that apparently has enough clout to say, no, up my money if you want me away from my kid that long. But then he's signing autographs at a rinky-dink store on a Friday night.
And the movies look so chintzy as well. But again, is that just Fred Durst being a bad director?
There's a lot of this where I wasn't sure if Fred Durst was doing an in-joke.
I know.
Or it's just incompetently made.
I think he was doing an in-joke.
Mm-hmm.
Incompetently.
Very good. An incompetent joke, incompetently made, is not a good joke.
Yeah. Boy, he is not good at directing. No. I mean, not that I'm Mr. Hey, you're good at directing, but he's bad.
I'll be honest. There was like 2 minutes where we're doing the establishing shots at the opening. I was like, oh, he's got an eye. He can set up some shots.
But then
I'm like, no, it's fucking Hollywood. There's just iconic places to put your camera.
Or most likely it was second unit photography. Because there was no actors in the show.
He likes low shots, man. He likes putting the camera on the ground.
So Moose, back in Hollywood, back in the Bobby outfit, he finally has a paying customer who's some very miserable looking little kid. He is like ripping Todd the God to his fucking paying customer. And he tells him, he's full of doo-doo.
I was calling Todd the God's a cohort that he broke up with. I was calling him Skinny because he's skinny. Turns out his name is Slim.
Nice.
I gave as much effort as Fred Durst did in naming these characters.
Absolutely. So after this, they're in the bathroom. Moose is in the bathroom, and in comes Todd the God and his flunky Slim.
And they're best friends again. They literally broke up, flipped each other off, and we're not going to do anything with each other anymore. They are back together to bully.
They are bullying as a team.
The bullies are back in town.
His friend actually forces Moose to simulate fellatio on a vape pen. That's a thing that John Travolta has now done in a film. Black security guard comes in and tells Moose, you got to fight back, kid.
Yeah.
You got to get tough. You got to get the eye of the tiger. No, he doesn't do that. Wait. But yeah, he's the cliched security guard who tells Moose, you got to fight back. You get those bullies. They're pushing around your whole life. So now more pointless narration, blah, 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 blah.
Did you notice that in every voiceover, there's a mixed metaphor? It's
cookie jars,
masks, crossing lines. There is a fucking, every time Fred Durst wrote that voiceover, which you know was done post-production.
Fred Durst wrote this film, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if we mentioned that he's also the screenwriter.
Well, it's story by and then
story and co-screenplay.
Yeah. So all that voiceover, you know, he sat there after each one. He's like,
fucking nailed that. Yeah, at one point, Leia says, Moose didn't just cross the line. He nuked it.
He fucking nuked it.
Nuked it, the line. Oh, boy. So Moose goes back to Hunter Dunbar's house. Remember, he got thrown, tossed already. Goes back to Hunter's house. Wants to leave the note. Maid sees him in the yard. And does she chase him off or he just runs off, right?
She yells at him and he runs off, but he leaves the note.
Right, okay. Yeah.
He accidentally drops it.
He accidentally drops it. That's right. That's right. He drops it and runs off.
But what's funny is when she comes out of the house of Hunter Dunbar's house, she's carrying an Oscar, and she's scaring away Travolta with an Oscar. And I was like, oh, that's a metaphor. That's appropriate.
Hunter Dunbar is like an Oscar winner, too. Yes. Like, what? Come on.
Travolta, that's his kryptonite, is an actual award.
So Moose tells Leah about the letter, and she's like, oh no, this is not good. She's getting worried.
Somehow she did not know this was going to happen.
Yeah, and she calls him a stalker, and Moose says his immortal line, I'm not a stalker, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's basically the entire movie in a nutshell. Like, you really get the feeling that Fred Durst is like, stalker, fan, stalker. Literally no difference to me.
This movie's written from such a paranoid, elitist point of view.
It really is. It's like, man, all those people who bought all my shitty albums, all those people who paid tickets to see my horrible concerts, and the 11 people who bought a ticket to this movie, what a bunch of fucking stalkers.
Yeah, like, you fucking leave me alone.
Piece of shit. God, it's,
and then it turns really into a jerk-off revenge fantasy at the end. It
really is just such a horrible, horrible perspective. Anyway, what an asshole. Todd the God. He's just everywhere Moose is. Wherever you need Todd the God to be, Todd the God is right there.
But guess who's not with him? Slim is gone.
No, Slim's gone.
We've lost Slim again.
You lost your muscle, so Moose is not so afraid anymore.
Not going to suck on any vape pins anymore, huh?
We should mention that there are two streets in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
There's Street A and Street B, and if you're looking for someone, I would try Street A. If they're not on Street A,
they're at Hunter Dunbar's.
Try Street B. And if they're not at Street B, go back to A, go man. Back to they're A. Probably there. But yeah, Todd the God is just right there. He starts talking shit. He's like, come on, let's do this. He's obviously a drug addict or something like that. He wants money for his drug habit. He says something to Moose, and Moose just pop. He just snaps.
First
grabs
time we
him
see
by the throat, chokes him, and just is talking complete insanity.
Yeah. It sounds like he doesn't know the line between reality absolutely and the movies.
So back at Hunter Dunbar's house, the maid mentions to Hunter Dunbar that she saw Moose in the yard, and he pretty much is like,
he is flippant as shit.
He does not care.
He does not.
Like, you just saw a dude in front of your house that like threatened to kill him.
You've threatened this man twice now who's following you, and the maid tells you, I saw this guy here.
And he just rolls his eyes and then makes a move on her.
Yep.
And then she's like, not so into that. She actually says, I don't think we can do this anymore.
Yeah.
And Hunter on the phone later, this is like how often this happened, he just is like, oh, yeah, I kissed the maid again. Like, he's talking to his handlers or whoever. And
that phone
like,
call is fucking again. Amazing, too.
I did that again. So Hunter leaves. Moose comes back. He finds his letter, and he puts
but
it, like,
before Hunter leaves, we have the very important gardener takes off early day scene. There's
why
a whole
was that like, there's like whole 5 minutes long? That scene was so long.
A whole scene where he goes out to talk, and the gardener's like, it's raining. Can I go home early? Yeah, why don't you go home early? But, you know, okay, cool. And that was it.
Like, why is that here? But it does set up nothing. Uh-huh. Nothing at all. So, yeah, Hunter takes off. Moose comes back. This
right?
is like his third time at the house. He grabs his letter and he puts it like on a stump so to be like, okay, well, everyone will see it because it's right on this stump, right? The maid comes out and is like, get the hell out of here. She's trying to swat him away. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, no. He just sucker punches her.
Yep.
She goes down dead.
Hits her head on a birdbath on the way
She's
down.
She's dead.
She's fucking gonzo.
And he yells, oh my gosh,
that's a nosebleed.
that's a nosebleed.
I had a nosebleed once.
But then he basically, because remember, he just forgets things after like a few seconds. He just looks up, realizes, oh shit, that's Hunter Dunbar's house, and just goes into the house. He goes in there, he starts going through his shit, he selfies himself.
We are
in the house.
what 30 45 minutes in the movie.
Yeah.
Moose has murdered a woman.
He's just murdered her.
That woman does not play out for another 40 minutes.
Oh, my
God. It's forgot about.
Yeah. No, you will need to remember to forget that there is a corpse.
On his
front lawn.
Not in the bushes, not hidden. It's laying out on his lawn.
Hide it. And it will be there for several days. With no one noticing it. No one notices it. It's so fucking insane. It's like, oh shit. Oh, I forgot about okay.
This movie is where the movie
so
goes full throttle
written.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Because
really
he's
does.
In Hunter Dunbar's house going all through his stuff.
goes to his medicine cabinet, watches his home movies.
They show his awards, and it's like, they're like regional salesman awards.
He's got a bunch of Dundies.
Exactly. And then, yeah, he goes to his medicine cabinet, and did you catch the little Scientology bit in it there?
Oh,
yeah.
He shouldn't be doing drugs.
Don't take pills.
Because pills are drugs, and yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. It's like, wow, is that really, did he smuggle that in there?
I think he smuggled, yeah.
Because your character is a murderer.
Yeah, right? But at least he doesn't take...
A kidnapper and a psychopath, but hey, man.
He doesn't take stuff for insomnia.
I don't see psychiatrists, because that is the work of the devil. Yeah, so now he's just going in the house. It's just this whole kind of presumed ownership over a celebrity in his life.
And then...
Like, I love this guy. I see him on screen, so I own every part of
it. I'm going to go poop in his toilet.
Take a shit in his toilet.
The scene of Travolta coming out of the bathroom, I wanted Butch to be there with a semi-automatic and shoot him dead.
So Hunter actually comes home, does not notice the dead body in his yard, neither does his son. He's hiding in his closet. He's hiding under the son's bed. I'm not sure how he got from the closet to under the bed.
There's a scene of Travolta hiding in a closet, which that's where I'm wondering, is this meta? Yeah. Is there an in-joke in there, Fred Durst?
So Hunter Dunbar, of course, remember, he takes a lot of those pills, so he just zonks out,
But this is the phone call. This is when he's talking to his handler, and he tells him about the I kissed the maid again.
Oh, yeah.
This is how the phone call wraps up. He goes, yeah, some weirdo's been sneaking around the house. I had to chase him away. Oh, okay, bye. If somebody told you that, and you're just like, oh, look, I gotta go. Look, I'm watching The Office. I gotta go.
So Hunter is fast asleep. He starts taking selfies with Hunter.
Yeah.
He kisses his forehead. He's just fucking with him, basically. And he actually just goes to sleep right next to him. Hunter is sleeping like on a chair in the living room. And Travolta does the same thing. He has this dream of being a child and watching Night of the Living Dead while some dude in a trucker hat prepares to plow his mom.
Why did they show? Like,
I would worry about little.
Don't worry about my little moosey. He's just watching the one public domain movie we can get footage of.
And the next morning, though, he wakes up.
Sleepover.
They have a little sleepover, but he wakes up next to Hunter and is able to take off just in time before Hunter wakes up because he's coming out of this, you know, drug induced haze. So now it's the next morning. Still a corpse in the backyard. Still
corpse watch, 18 corpse hours. Watch,
still there.
We're at 18 hours.
Hunter is now driving his son to school, and what music do they play?
This is where I'm like, Limp what the
Bizkit?
But Devin Sawa goes, you want to hear a little Limp Bizkit?
Yeah.
I used to listen to this
Not
shit.
So subtle about it.
And it doesn't like cut away.
No.
It goes they have on.
A discussion about how great the music is and how it basically spans the generations because dad loved it when he was a kid and now the son loves it too.
Sawa, I thought there was like he was reacting to something he saw. He's like, oh yeah, look at that. Or he's, oh yeah, that's nice. That is nice. I thought he was like ogling a woman.
You're talking about the music?
No, he's still talking about Limp Bizkit. It is just going on.
So long. It is weird. It is like it started as maybe like a little self-deprecating joke of like, oh, let's put some Limp Bizkit in there. But then it was like, no, talk about how it's really good. Talk it up. Yeah.
Really, I think this was Durst's commentary.
Yeah.
That Hunter Dunbar is really just a moose for Limp Bizkit.
Yes. That's so maybe my final Hunter thought. Hunter Dunbar is the real life moose who stalked Fred Durst.
All I got from this movie is that Fred Durst wishes he wrote Stan. He wishes he wrote Stan. He's got Eminem envy.
He really does. Oh, fuck. So as they're driving, Hunter sees Moose because Moose is escaping on foot. He's walking home on foot, right?
He's doing that walk. He's talked about the inflatable.
The schlubby walk.
Yeah.
He sees Moose on the road and gets out of the car because he told him never come in my neighborhood and accosts him and chews him out and screams at him. And Moose is ready to take off and he seems properly ashamed. But of course, Hunter... just going to be a dick for no reason.
Says the S word.
Says the S word, calls him a stalker, and Moose freaks the fuck out. So this is basically Moose hitting his breaking point. It's all coming off. The scooter, it breaks down. Symbolism. He's yelling at himself in the mirror. Symbolism. He burns his Hunter Dunbar memorabilia. Yes, symbolism. That is a thing that you put in movies.
I was waiting for a voiceover of listen, you fucks, you screwheads. This is a man who will not take it anymore.
Leah harangues Moose again because that's what she does.
She comes up, she says, you look like shit. He looks exactly the same as he looked all movie.
How can you tell?
Yeah.
How can you possibly tell? And he shoves her away and says, you're mean.
Yeah.
And now this is, he's taking his revenge. Hunter wakes up, but this time he wakes up in bonds. He has rope around all of his arms and legs. And he wakes up and actually sees Moose on the ground with what looks like a big head wound and blood coming out. But Moose has just gone completely off the rails. He faked having a head wound.
What is this? What is this plan?
This whole sequence is.
He just laid there until he woke up?
He just woke up, yeah. It's perfectly poised too, and everything. There's no, like, you would think if you're doing that for yourself, it would be hard to get all of the everything lined up. But yeah, got it right, just right for the eye line and everything. But yeah, no, he's jumps up and this basically starts this really long sequence of
torturing. Would you call it torturing? Like mental?
I felt tortured.
It's psychological torture.
He's just like fucking with him, right? Like he really is just fucking with him.
He's glad he fooled him that he thought he killed himself at his bed, and then he leaves and he comes back in a Jason mask with a knife.
Yeah, and it's he stabs him, but it's one of those fake movie knives that retracts into it.
And he starts saying, you were like, you weren't as good as Jamie Lee Curtis.
Right.
Right? Which I sat there and I go, wait, he's wearing a Jason mask. And he's talking about Jamie Lee Curtis, like Halloween.
Yeah.
Is that to avoid copyright? Is that so they can right? Like weasel their way? We're like, no, we weren't talking about Halloween. We weren't talking about Friday the 13th.
Yeah, who knows?
We mixed it all up.
All up in the air there.
Or maybe he's just talking about Perfect.
But yeah, he's just all over the place because Hunter is like, hey, you know, what the hell? Get me out of here. And Moose is like, I love you. But then he starts pouring what appears to be gasoline on him.
Saying, Mr. Blonde.
Mr. Blonde, Mr. Blonde. Yeah, so he's doing this Reservoir Dog thing. But it's a fake out. It's just water.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's basically like hostage kidnapper mind games. So you get like a few minutes of the kidnapper's torturing the hostage, and then now we get a few minutes of the hostage is playing his mind games, and he's going to manipulate the kidnapper into letting him go.
But on a really dumb level.
On an idiotic level. So they do this whole like visualization thing. It's like, let's visualize it. So it's basically this sweet talk about like all the cool stuff they're going to do together when you let me go, and it's going to be great. And that allows Hunter to turn the tables, grab the shotgun.
You kind of gave a short shrift because the lighting changes.
Yeah.
Travolta lays on his chest and starts hugging on him and smiling. And then he convinces him to untie him. And Travolta's face, I genuinely felt in this one moment. Moose's face. He's so like little puppy.
Yeah.
And then Hunter Dunbar just pulls it. He reaches his hand up and pulls his... this is after he cold cocks him, right?
Yeah.
So he's got his puppy face. He headbutts him and knocks him out.
Yeah.
The lighting changes. It's now dark again. And he just reaches up and then pulls a shotgun into frame.
Yeah.
It was like... Remember in Top Secret when someone just hands a gun off the... Or they reach behind a log and there's a pillow? That was literally how that was.
Yeah. So he grabs the shotgun... Shoots his fingers off. Shoots Racks all of Moose's fingers
blows
off.
Blows his fucking fingers off.
Goes to shoot him again. Click. At which point he swings. No, grabs out a dagger.
Not yet. Because he shoots his things off and Travolta whines, cries, crawls out to the stairwell. He boots him down the stairwell like Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2. Yeah. Following him down slowly, like stalking him with a shotgun. And then blows a shot next to his left ear, right ear to deafen him. And then goes to kill him. It clicks. A Rambo knife comes from the same place that other thing came out. Todd the God thought he's a magician. Hunter Dunbar is pulling stuff out of anywhere. Stabs him in the fucking eye. In the fucking eye.
Stabs him in the eye.
You get a shot like Pesci in Casino.
Yeah. It gets a little horror movie.
The eyeball burbles and Travolta is just screaming.
At which point, Hunter Dunbar... escorts Moose out the front door.
Just opens it.
Opens it, lets him go.
On this your way, sir.
He's like broken into your house and took you hostage.
Hey,
he just leaves.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah. Look, it's been fun.
He then puts his back to the door, slides down, and holds his temples.
Yes, right. As you do. As you do. And now Moose is walking down the Walk of Fame with a trail of blood because of what were we talking about earlier?
Symbolism.
Ah, Fred Durst, you maniac. These dudes come, they think it's a costume because what the fuck is wrong with these guys? It's so weird. Oh, the great costume of like a mentally challenged man who's been beaten to a pulp and has his fingers shot up.
Open wounds on his face.
That classic character. Batman was over there. This is way better. Oh, fuck. But Leia, because remember, there's only two streets in Los Angeles.
That's right.
So Leia is driving right by. She sees Moose on the street. And she goes and kind of picks him up. So at which point you're like, okay, I guess the movie's over.
Guess it's over.
No.
Uh-uh.
Policeman.
Another voiceover.
Knocking on the door. Knocking on Hunter Dunbar's door. They're taking him to jail.
So he opens the door. The cops are there. Now, when they knock on the door, he's in the same position. That's why he slides down the door.
He hasn't moved.
He's sitting right there.
Hasn't moved.
He stands up and answers the door to the cops and the gardener. The cops and the gardener stand there. The cops went and picked up the gardener to make this bust. And then they arrest him, right?
Yeah. They finger him for the maid's murder.
I'm glad you said finger, because there are fingers still sitting up in the bedroom that he could say, there was an intruder I killed.
I have a lot of DNA evidence.
Yes.
Also, could you check the body and see if it's been dead for several... Do it again? Also, can you check the body and see if it's been dead for several days?
Several days?
Can you check these things with your modern forensics?
There is a blood trail and footprints all the way to the Walk of Fame.
Which, never mind the idea that this dude, who is apparently a millionaire actor living in a secluded mansion, has no security cameras.
None?
Nothing.
And
no securities at all.
To back way the fuck up, his little... paparazzi friend says, you've been posting pictures of you breaking into Hunter Dunbar's on social media.
There is so much evidence to get Moose. But Hunter Dunbar gets taken off to prison. He does not say anything to the officers.
Nope.
He makes no defense of like, hey, this is crazy. Here are dozens of reasons why.
He's like, it's a fair call.
He's like, whatever. I get it.
It's a fair call.
I shot a dude's fingers off. Let's go. Let's get it done. And that's it. Leia comes and she helps up Moose. Moose is like, wants to see who's on the what star. He's dripping blood all over. And he says, Louise Fletcher, she is not a good nurse. At which point, a voiceover
of
Moose yelling comes in and says, I am not a stalker. Like, there's a voiceover over a shot of fucking Moose. Oh, man. And that is the end.
And then you are treated. And we said this movie's 88 minutes.
Yeah.
But the last 8 minutes are the starting credits again.
Yeah.
He put the same credits at the end.
Oh, man. And that's your movie.
That is your movie.
That's your Fanatic. Your movie with no ending. Is the ending just that Moose lives happily ever after?
Was when they were looking at Louise Fletcher, was that the same morning as she found him? I don't think so, but you can't tell.
It makes no fucking sense.
It completely falls apart. That whole cop thing is just like, who watched this? What executive watched this and was like, yeah, but what about this?
Yeah.
What about that? Because those are obvious glaring questions.
It would have been so simple for him to just have Moose hide the body?
Yes, right.
Or like have something cover her or something? Like, there's just a dead body. People are coming and going from this house for several days. Hunter leaves and comes back many times. His son does. The gardener does.
It's visible from windows of other houses.
You can just look as you walk by. Does no one walk in this goddamn neighborhood? Yeah, it's so... sloppy. It's so sloppy. And again, it makes me think that maybe this was retconned
tons
to be like, shit, let's just try to make the Travolta character semi-sympathetic in any sort of way, or let's make it a more of an obvious kind of Hunter needs to get punished for something. Yeah, it's so weird how the, how it ends. It's very, it's inexplicable. And man, it's just a terrible movie.
Yeah, it is awful. It's truly, truly awful.
So, Corky, any final thoughts on The Fanatic before we give our ratings?
I think it really is. It's a paranoid revenge fantasy film from someone who had experiences with fame.
Yeah.
And it's a contemptible view of people who are actually fans of pop culture and that kind of stuff. And it's someone who doesn't understand what makes a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I was trying to think of Fred Durst's script writing books that he would read. Like, one would be called like Fucking Movies. Yeah, bro. Or How to Shoot the Same Scene 7 Times Over. Or first drafts for fun and no profit.
Yeah, right.
But he doesn't know how to make a movie. So he doesn't understand, like he doesn't understand to make Devon Sawa just have a be likable at the beginning. All he had to do was be likable to the point
even
where
relatable.
And then Travolta kind of puts him off and it's like, that's understandable.
It's understandable.
But no, he's threatening from the beginning.
To be a celebrity who has somebody coming up to you like this and to be turned off by them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Again, it goes back to like King of Comedy. Not that this movie has to be as great as King of Comedy, but you do actually feel a twinges of empathy for like the Jerry Lewis character.
Yeah.
Right. You don't feel anything.
You feel nothing.
Because he's a piece of shit, and there's no reason why. Everything's fine.
And then, like you said, at the end, it's like, we got to make Devon Sawa pay. But it doesn't make any sense in a realistic world. It
doesn't make any sense at all.
I'm more on his side than I am on Moose's side.
Like, I have no clue, ultimately, what this movie is trying to say about Moose, you know, and his role in the world.
And you call him fucking Moose. You made your mentally deficient character an animal. The fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, it does seem as though, you know, as you're saying, this comes from a perspective of someone who has actually lived through some of this stuff and has had stalker fans, and it is an opportunity or was an opportunity to confront that and to be real about that and honest about that.
Yeah.
Right? But, hey, Fred Durst, you're a douche, so you didn't do it. So.
Yeah.
Let's give our ratings. Run-of-the-mill bad film, It's a Dare. Next level bad film, Double Dare. And a movie we actually kind of like reverse dare. Corky, what's your rating for The Fanatic?
This movie is a movie that I want people to see, but it's a double dare because it's fucking awful.
Yeah.
It's loathsome in its setup and carry through. And however, I want you to see it because I want you to be aware of it.
Yes.
And then also, kind of, for our own edification, I want more movies like this made. Keep us in business.
Make more movies, Fred Durst. This is magic. You got something here. I'm gonna go Dare.
Yeah.
Because it is a horrible movie, but it is somewhat fascinating at the same time. It just comes from such a wrong-headed place that it's kind of interesting. And Travolta, obviously, like I said, it's no holds barred, man. It's all or nothing.
You're never gonna not get Travolta.
Oh boy.
In a movie.
You're going to get a lot of Travolta here. Too much.
Too much.
Sure. Too much. But yeah, I'll give it a dare just for the sort of traffic accident fascination factor.
Gotcha. So that's all we have for you on this episode of Dare Daniel in this month of Travoltember. But we'll be back in 2 weeks to review another one of your movie dares.
Until then, send your most sadistic or altruistic movie dares to us at daredaniel.com. And be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like and rate us on the iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's not a big deal. We won't judge. You can read more of my movie reviews on the Dare Daniel website at daredaniel.com. Corky.
Yes.
Where can people find you doing your moosey thing?
You'll
all
find
up on
me
on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, you'll find me on Hollywood Boulevard busking in a bobby suit saying, welcome to London Bridge. There is the Beatles walking there. Hello. Hello.
Poppycock. Amazing.
And it comes back.
Poppycock.
They bring it back.
Keep bringing it back. Yeah, no, that's what I think.
It was like a Martin Short character.
Right?
It was
that was the movie. That was your movie.
That
and
was
then you
movie.
Went with the standard revenge thriller bullshit.
But I'll be at Sacramento Comedy Spot performing Saturdays and Fridays, Anti-Cooperation League, Masters of Raps, Improv. Come down, take classes, see shows.
That sounds awesome. For Dare Daniel, I'm Daniel Barnes. Our producer is Johnny Moose Flores.
And I'm Corky McDowell saying, I got to go because I got to poo. Puppy.